This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hello, folks. Bob Main here, and this is the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 72. This is a practical firearms podcast. I'm not a gunsmith or ex-law enforcement or ex-military or a firearms trainer. I'm just a private guy. And I believe the Second Amendment is the amendment that makes all the other amendments possible. And so I talk about the practice and shooting and owning and carrying of firearms from an everyday guy's perspective. I'm on Interstate 35. Taking advantage of some windshield time driving north up to Oklahoma. So as I cruise along here at about 72 miles an hour, watching my rear view mirror and eating some healthy snacks here, trying to kick the junk food, I'm down 9 pounds since about a month ago, so I'm on the right track again. I want to talk about a couple of subjects. There's actually two names to this show. The primary name is, does grip angle really matter? You know, there's a lot of people talking about the grip angle of the gun. You know, and of course, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when people talk about grip angle? Yeah, Glocks. And everybody, you know, puts down Glocks because they say the grip angle is terrible. I'm going to analyze that subject. Also, I'm going to talk about video games and firearms. And why video games, sometimes, unfortunately, are firearms trainers. Sounds weird, huh? Bet you haven't heard anybody in the gun podcast world talk about why video games are firearms trainers. I'm not going to make that point. Somebody else is going to make that point for me. I've got a good soundbite for you to listen to on that subject. Let me knock out a couple of announcements real quick. First announcement. I'm going to be changing up the show a little bit. I've decided, I put a poll on the Gun Rights Radio Network, not much response to it, so I went ahead and made my own decision. For me, for my own ease of putting together a show, and hopefully for your listening pleasure, I am going to change this to about a 20 to 25 minute show, but I'm going to post three of them a week. It's going to be a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday show. It's going to be a lot easier for me. Typically, what I've been doing lately is doing two or three segments over a period of 4 or 5 days, putting them together and making one big long show once a week. I don't know about you folks, but you know, I listen to a lot of other podcasts. And maybe this is just me, but no matter how good the podcast is, after about 20 minutes, I start to drift. And I thought to myself, and my wife kind of pointed it out to me. She said, you know, Bob, maybe some people are drifting after 20 minutes of listening to you. Now, see, she drifts after about 20 seconds of listening to me. Ooh, boy, I'm going to get slapped for saying that. I know it, because she listens to this show. Anyway, I won't get off too much on that tangent there. However, expect a show Monday and Wednesday, Friday, 20 to 25 minutes apiece, so give me 65-70 minutes a week, every week, and I'll give you some good information about firearms. The next announcement, don't forget about my Freedom Raffle. I've talked about it quite a bit. Let me say it again. Could you use a Ruger LCP? Could you use a pocket gun? If you don't currently have a good pocket gun, they're good backup guns, not primary carry, but I'm giving away a Ruger LCP, nicely engraved. Also, two $100 gift certificates to CompTac, any CompTac holster that they make, and $100 for some new knives or some other cool gear over at knivesandgear.com. There'll be four winners to the raffle. Forget PayPal. PayPal sucks. They don't support our Second Amendment rights. Don't support them. You can use any major credit card. Go to the Handgun World Show webpage, which is handgunworld.com. It's real easy, folks. Where are you wasting $10? This week, don't waste $10. Buy a raffle ticket. I just sent out a whole bunch of raffle tickets on Monday. I'll do it every Monday. I'm doing it the old-fashioned way. I'm mailing you a ticket. I like to have a ticket in hand when I buy raffle tickets. So I figure maybe some of you do, too. click the Freedom Raffle or just use the donate button on the page at handgunworld.com. Get a raffle ticket or two or three and see if you can win it. Also, don't forget, good causes are going to be supported by this raffle. The Gun Rights Radio Network, my show, and right now the NRA is in the lead, but get on my thread at the Gun Rights Radio Network forums and vote as to where you want part of the money to go to. That's it. Oh, by the way, my YouTube. I got to talk about YouTube real quick. I'll make this fast, and then we'll get into the main topic matter. I messed up my YouTube channel. And a few days ago, I deleted every stupid video that was on there. Fortunately, all but two of them I've saved on my external hard drive. So I uploaded them again. So do me a favor. Go back and look at all those videos again. I want to get my users back up. Some of my videos had 1,500, 1,600 views on them. So if you do me a favor and just, listen, even if it's just listening to part of my videos. I made a few mistakes on some of the recent ones that I put up, some safety errors. Shouldn't do that, but hey, I'll admit mistakes. When I make them, I'll throw my hand up in the air and say, I goofed. So I'll be doing some gun handling safety videos coming up. But check out my YouTube channel, Handgun World Show, on YouTube. Okay, enough of the announcements. I don't like this to be a real commercial show. Let's talk about grip angle. The dreaded Glock grip angle. Even if you're not a Glock person, think about what I'm going to say here on grip angle. I put together some thoughts. My opinion is that the whole argument about grip angle has been kind of blown way out of proportion in the gun world. I firmly believe that any good shooter can pick up almost any weapon and hit a target with it. The basics of shooting don't change much, just because the grip angle is different. Now, I want you to do something, because the first thing that comes to your mind when people talk about grip angle or grip shape is the dreaded Glock grip angle, right? Do this. Take a Glock and take a 1911. Double check and triple check. Make sure they're both unloaded. Set them down on top of the slide on a table and take a good look at the grips compared side by side. See how much different the Glock grip angle is than a 1911. I bet you're going to notice it's not as far off as you might think. And I believe that a lot of the excuses about, I can't shoot a Glock because of the lousy grip angle, I think it's an excuse for poor shooting habits. Really. Now, when it comes to point shooting, okay, I'll give you the fact that Glocks do point a little high. Yes, they do. So when it comes to point shooting, I'll give you that. I also think that when it comes to point shooting, if you've trained over and over and over again, if you've given your Glock a 1,000-round trigger job, like I've said so many times on this show, every pistol you own, you should shoot it 1,000 rounds. Oh, no, it's very expensive, Bob. I can't believe you're saying that. Yeah, I'm saying it. I know 1,000 rounds of ammunition is expensive. It's one reason why I shoot 9mm, because it's cheaper than most of the other ammo out there. Even if you have a 45 or a 40 caliber, folks, I don't care if you have to go get some reloads from somebody. Shoot that thing 1,000 rounds. If you do your own reloading, then you're saving money. You will be a better shot on the 1,000th round than you were on the first round with any gun, bar none, I don't care. And before you make any trigger modifications or even grip modifications, get to know your gun. Shoot it 1,000 times, preferably 2,000. You challenge me. I've yet to have somebody send me an email saying that they can't shoot better on the 1,000th round than they did on the first. Haven't got an email like that yet. So this whole grip angle thing, I think, is a lot of excuses. Now, I'll talk about point shooting a little bit later on the show and how to overcome that when shooting a Glock. But I want you to think about some questions. For those of you that use a lot of tools, if you're a handyman, are there 10 or 12 different styles of, let's say, skill saw handles? Do we have our lawnmowers fitted to make sure the grip angle is just right? Do we have the lawnmower fitted to your hand? Is the steering wheel on your car fitted? Do Do you have custom grips on your cookware? Yeah, I cook. I'll admit it. Hey, I love cooking. Right? And what? Guess what? Every pot and pan has a different grip on it. I get used to using those. I got a couple of electric saws. Both of them have grips that feel a little bit different. I used to use a chainsaw a lot back in the day. Every chainsaw feels just a little bit different. You learn to use it, don't you? Every screwdriver feels a little bit different. Every wrench feels a little bit different. You learn to use them, don't you? Okay, they're all tools that we as humans have learned to use just the way they're made. And I believe the same thing with a Glock pistol or any other pistol. You can learn to use it just the way it's made. If more people worry about fixing their bad shooting habits than their grips on their guns, I think everybody would shoot a lot better. Think about our armed forces out there. How many soldiers do we have out there using the same weapons very effectively without any modifications? A lot. Now, I'm not an expert shooter by any means. You've heard me on this show talk a lot about some of my faults in shooting. But I recognize that every pistol that I have is more accurate than I will ever be. Most problems can be fixed with trigger control. Trigger control and sight alignment. It's not going to be fixed by grip angle. I've seen a lot of people that take a 1911, perfect grip angle, right? Yeah, 1911s are the holy grail of grip angles. And I'm being serious when I say that. Yeah, it is. It's the best feeling gun on the planet. No question about it, when I put a 1911 in my hand, it feels better than any gun I could ever pick up. That's true. 1911s win the grip angle argument, period. And you know what? I've seen people that are real crappy shots with a 1911. And I've seen people with Glocks kick people's butt with a 1911. Is it because of the grip angle? Conversely, I've seen people with 1911s kick Glock's butts in competition shooting. Is it because of the grip angle? No, I think it's the Indian, not the arrow. It's the guy or gal pulling the trigger and how much practice and how much training they have. Now, if the grip angle really is something that just is causing a mental block in your shooting, there's plenty of places you can have the Glock grip changed. One of the great things about grip reductions out there, and there's a lot of good companies out there doing grip reductions, you can get that Glock grip changed. You can get it shaped. GripReductions.com in Houston is a good one. Dale Honeycutt. GripReductions.com. Robar does good grip reduction work. Grip angle work. They'll even put a beaver tail on it for you on a Glock. One of my Glock 19s has that. Dale Honeycutt did the work on it. David Bowie of Bowie Tactical is phenomenal. Some of his work is really good. He can make that Glock fit comfy. And the nice thing about changing a Glock grip is you don't have to give up any of the supreme reliability and simplicity of the weapon. Now, don't spend your money with those places until you've trained and trained and trained and given your gun a 1,000-round trigger job. Figure out what you're doing wrong first, then change the grip on it if you must. So let me continue by saying that the Glock grip angle was designed to be steeper. It was designed that way. When Glock built that pistol, it was purely from an engineering standpoint. They wanted to make the pistol lightweight, and they wanted to lower the bore axis. One of the nice things about the Glock grip angle is it keeps that barrel. What I mean by bore axis is it keeps that sitting low in your hand. Keeping that bore axis low makes the recoil force received by your hand in much more of a linear fashion. And the theory is that it contributes to a decrease in the muzzle rise. And it also decreases the felt recoil. It doesn't actually decrease the amount of recoil, but it decreases the amount of felt recoil. For me, that works great. That's one of the reasons, one of the big reasons why I carry and shoot Glocks a lot. Now, I have a 1911. I've told you about that. Fantastic gun. And improvements over the years on 1911 make them a lot easier to control than what they used to be. But I like that low bore axis. I've yet to find a pistol that when I get a good high grip and I get the web of my hand up high on the tang, I've yet to find a pistol that sits lower in my hand than a Glock. I believe that gives one real good control. Now, one of the things I like about what Dale Honeycutt does at GripProductions.com is he can shrink the grip for people that have smaller hands, but not change the angle of it too much. He can do a slight grip reduction where he keeps pretty much the angle, but just makes the grip skinnier so it's easier for you to grab on. And he also puts a nice, very well done beaver tail on that tang. And some people say that gives him better control. But having said that, I think that a good true shooter should be able to adapt to any well-engineered pistol and learn to use it effectively. I think all this grip angle nitpicky nonsense is really an outgrowth of poor shooting habits and bad trigger control. And it's also an outgrowth of a bunch of internet commandos that don't like a particular pistol with a particular grip angle. Now, no grip angle discussion would be complete. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about this. How many of you own a Ruger Mark III 22 pistol? I don't own one, but I've rented one twice. So I've got about over 500 rounds of practice with a Ruger Mark III. I've also got a real good friend of mine. Again, you know I don't like to talk about guns that I don't shoot or haven't owned. Okay, excuse me, folks. Got a little distracted there. I told you I'm on a business trip. Had to grab a business phone call. That comes first. Anyway, the Ruger Mark III. So, have you ever shot one? Do you own one? Why don't you take a look at the grip angle of a Ruger Mark III? And it's very similar to the Glock grip angle. Yet, I hear everybody talk about how the Ruger Mark III is such a great training pistol. And it is. It is an excellent training pistol. How about a Browning Buckmark 22? Check out the grip angle on that. Kind of Glockish. So, it's interesting. There are people that shoot guns that have grip angles very similar to the Glock, and it's okay on other guns, but once the gun has a brand name called Glock on it, then all of a sudden the grip angle's now a problem. So, I think it's kind of a non-issue. And I'm going to take a break, but I got some more info on that. But during this break, I want you to listen to somebody else talk about video games and firearms trainers. That's all I'm going to say. Are video games firearms trainers? The answer may shock you. Listen to this 9-minute audio clip, and then I'll be right on afterwards.
Quote from the Journal of the American Medical Association. Quote, the introduction of television in the 1950s, just the stuff in the 50s, caused a subsequent doubling of the homicide rate, i.e., long-term childhood exposure to TV is a causal factor behind approximately one half of the homicides committed in the U.S., or approximately 10,000 homicides committed annually. They go on to say that if, hypothetically, TV technology had never been developed, there would today be 10,000 fewer homicides each year in the U.S., 70,000 fewer rapes, and 700,000 fewer injurious assaults. The American Medical Association said just a few years ago that the number one healthcare emergency in America is media violence. Every single major medical scientific body in the world that has ever looked at this topic has come to the same clear-cut conclusion. The National Institute of Mental Health in 1982 assessed 2,500 scholarly studies from around the world and came to the conclusion that there is a clear consensus about the link between media violence and real-world violence. As the child gets older, and now we have the classical conditioning. Remember Pavlov's dog? Remember where you associate the bell with the food and the salivation and all that business? Well, what happens to the kids is this. They get to a certain age and they realize that it's not real anymore. They realize that it's not real, and they wonder how to respond, and they learn to laugh and cheer in response to it. They learn to associate pleasure with vivid depictions of human death and suffering. The Japanese were the real masters at this. What the Japanese would do is in World War II, they would take out an enemy prisoner, a Chinese or an American or a British prisoner, and they'd tie him up to a stake, and then they'd have their young unblooded privates all gather around him, and one of those privates would take the bayonet, and they would bayonet this enemy prisoner to death. A brutal, horrific, long, tragic way to kill another human being. And while that Japanese private was butchering this individual, what did all the other privates do? They cheered and they laughed and they mocked his suffering. And then that night they were given the best meal that they've had in months, and the sake is shipped in and the comfort girls are shipped in. And they learned to associate human death and suffering with what? Pleasure. Pleasure. Now our children are sitting in the movie theaters and they're watching vivid depictions of human death and suffering. What do they do when they see somebody being vividly, horrifically, brutally murdered on the screen? They cheer and they laugh like those Japanese soldiers, and they learn to associate it with their favorite candy bar and their favorite soft drink and their girlfriend's perfume. And they become systematically not just desensitized to human death and suffering, but they learn to actually associate it with pleasure. After the shootings in Jonesboro, one of the high school teachers that's right next door to the school where the shootings happened came to me. And she said, you know, all this stuff that you're talking about as far as this violence enabling in the media, I saw it in my kids yesterday. Now, the high school is right next door in this kind of rural school district. These are the big brothers and the big sisters of the kids that have just been shot to bits. She said, we heard the shots, and I ran to the office to find out what's going on. She said, I came back to my high school classroom with tears in my eyes, the most horrible moment in my life, and I told my students, the sounds that you just heard was somebody shooting a bunch of the middle schoolers. And she looked at me with horror in her eyes, and she said, you know what they did when I told them that? They laughed. They laughed. Now, they weren't laughing later, and they weren't cheering later. An hour later, when the reality had set in, but society had taught them to laugh and cheer at human death and suffering, like the Romans sitting out there in the Colosseum, laughing and cheering at death and suffering. The next step is operant conditioning that makes killing a conditioned response, an automatic, reflexive, conditioned response. What are the kids doing when they play the video games? The kid puts a quarter in that video game and picks up a gun. What is he doing? Stimulus response, stimulus response, stimulus response, stimulus response. Not hundreds, but thousands and thousands of times, they are being conditioned to immediately, reflexively, mercilessly, brutally gun down their fellow citizens. When you're out there on the firing range, if you point your gun in the wrong direction, if you fire in the wrong direction, you fire at the wrong time, what happens to you? Very bad things happen to you. And that's the way it ought to be, because that discipline is the factor that makes it possible for your society to entrust you with lethal force. If you do not have that discipline, then what you have is individuals who are capable of the violence, but without the discipline. And that is what happens when the kids play the video games. They point and shoot and point and shoot and point and shoot. Now understand that the military and the law enforcement, you've only got to go be qualified about once every 6 months to really be at your peak. All you got to do is go fire 50 rounds once every 6 months, and the conditioning is there. Where the kids, they're doing these things weekly. These point-and-shoot video games, they're not video games, they're firearms trainers. Our only advantage as warriors has generally been in our training. But you know what? The training advantage is now being lost because they're able to get thousands and thousands of hours on the range and fire thousands of shots for just a few quarters. Kids across America today have an immediate expectation that when they pick a gun up in their hand, they will kill. They will shoot. You know, as a hunter, you spend days in the woods and never fire a shot. A policeman, a soldier, spends weeks and weeks carrying a weapon around and never fires a shot. But the kids across America have this expectation that when they pick up a gun, the first thing they'll do is they will shoot, and they will shoot at what? Human beings. Now, I want you to understand how powerful and effective these things can be. Let me give you another case study. And this is the most powerful one that I've ever seen. It happened in a place called Paducah, Kentucky. A kid by the name of Michael Carneal, a 14-year-old kid, walks into school with a .22 caliber pistol. Now, Michael Carneal had never fired a pistol before in his life, before stealing that gun from a neighbor's house and firing a couple of practice rounds. His parents had protected him from guns for a lifetime. He had fired a .22 caliber rifle one time at camp. He walks into the school and he fires 8 shots. Now, the FBI says that less than 20%, less than 1 bullet in 5 of the rounds fired by trained, qualified, hardened, conditioned law enforcement officers hit their target. It's very hard to hit moving targets. Most people don't sit there and cooperate and hold still for you while you're shooting at them, number one. Number two, the stress of killing another human being puts you over the top. Number three, the potential of bullets coming back at you. You add those together, and it's astounding that we get 1 bullet in 5 in on the target. Now, Michael Carneal, 14-year-old boy, had never fired a pistol before, fires 8 shots. How many hits does he get? 8 shots, 8 hits on 8 different kids. 5 of them are headshots. The other 3 are upper torso. Well, the thing you need to know about this kid was he was the master of the video games. His parents had arcade-quality games in the house, and he had shot and shot and shot and shot. And so what happened was he came in, he planted his feet, and he never moved his feet. He held the gun up in a two-handed stance, and he got this blank look on his face. And then he began to open fire. Now, there weren't a great quantity of kids in front of him. There was a prayer group that had just broken up and were splitting up. It wasn't like there were hundreds of kids in front of him. There were just a couple of dozen targets. He held the gun up. He never fired far to the left. He never fired far to the right. Never far up. Never far down. Stood there with that blank look in his face and put 1 shot in everything that popped up on his screen. What was he doing? He was playing a stinking video game. And this business of 1 shot in every target, this is really astounding. It is not natural to fire 1 shot at every target. It's not natural. The natural response is to do what? To shoot until the target drops and then move on to the next target. Where did he get this 1 shot at every target business? What do the video games teach you to do? If you're really, really, really good, what are you going to do? 1 shot, and don't even wait for them to drop. Go to the next and the next and the next, and you know they're going to drop because you've done it thousands of times. And oh, by the way, the video games give bonus effects for what? Headshots. Headshots. In the annals of military and law enforcement and criminal history, I cannot find an equivalent achievement. The military and the law enforcement community has always used role models. We have had role models that we hold up in front of individuals, and we call them heroes, and we give them medals, and they commit acts of incredible valor on the battlefield, and we say, if you do the same thing, we'll make you famous too. And for 5,000 years of recorded human history, these role models have been the single most valuable and useful tool that we use to inspire people to engage in acts of disciplined violence for their civilization. Well, now what happens is the kids are getting role models. Jason and Freddy and sociopaths on the movies.
Whoo! Profound, huh? Once again, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman from The Bulletproof Mind. So let me ask you a question. Are video games firearms trainers? I'll let you decide. All right, let me finish the show. I've gone over 20 minutes, as I promised I wouldn't. Sorry, bear with me, just a couple minutes. Back to the grip angle issue. Here's an analogy for you to think about. A great photographer can take a good picture with a $40 camera, whereas a crappy photographer would probably only take a mediocre picture with a $2,000 camera. A good golfer can make a great shot with a worn-out, rusted club. A lousy golfer doesn't get any better with a $2,000 set of clubs and $200 shoes. It's not the equipment. It's you. Now, the only time the grip angle should really bear much into how well you shoot is probably in point shooting. But even then, it's distance that's going to dictate how well you shoot. And if you shoot well, you shoot well. With a Glock grip angle, you can point shoot. If you practice enough, you point shoot it, your muscle memory will take over. You'll put the shots where you need to put them, especially at close distance. So think about grip angles for a minute. The 1911 and the high power are about the same. Their grip angle is about 106, okay, about 16 degrees from 90. The Glock is about 110, 20 degrees from 90. So about a 4-degree difference. Is 4 degrees really going to make that much of a difference? The muscle memory will overcome that. Your practicing over and over and over again, I think, will overcome the few degrees difference in grip angle. And when all is said and done, at the end of the day, training and practice will allow anyone to shoot well no matter what it is, no matter what the grip angle of the gun is. And most top shooters do most of their training and most of their shooting with one gun. So what's the old saying? Beware of the man with just one gun? Because he likely knows how to use it. And that's why I stick with one system of gun. Of course, I own more than one handgun, but the vast majority of my handguns are the same style. I happen to like Glocks, but the grip angle does not bother me at all, folks. If you like 1911s, that's great. If you like XDs, M&Ps, even revolvers, as I mentioned, that's fine. But think about even when you get a new car. The controls are different on a new car, right? When I got rid of my Dodge and switched to my Honda, big difference in the controls. Big difference in the quality of the vehicle, too. But I won't go there. Anyway, big difference in the controls. A few days later, I'm driving the Honda just as well as I drove the Dodge. I got used to it, folks. You know why? Because the basics of driving don't change. And the controls are in a little bit of a different spot, and maybe they weren't quite as ergonomically friendly on the Dodge as they are on the Honda, but even so, I had to get used to them, and I had to get used to how they were arranged. So get proficient with what you have, and carry whatever it is that you've been proficient with. With that said, thanks for tuning in to episode number 72 of the Handgun World Show. I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you on episode number 73. Take care. Safe shooting, everybody. Bye-bye.